Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Do you enjoy paddle sports? Well, you're not alone. Larry Mueller here again. Thank you for joining us as we visit with Darren Bush, chief paddling evangelist and owner of Rutabaga Paddle Sports. He's getting ready for Canoe Copia this weekend, and we'll be talking about what's new in the industry, great places to paddle, and of course, answer all of your questions about the sport. What do you want to know about paddling? Let us know by calling at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. You can also tweet us at L. Mueller Show, and we would certainly love to hear from you. Darren Bush, cross the microphone from me here in the studios. Darren, great to have you back.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
You know what? I've got the wrong microphone on. Now I have the right microphone on, I think.
Is this testing?
Yeah, there we go.
Okay, here we go.
Nice to have you back.
Thanks.
You know, there was no snowshoeing in southern Wisconsin, so to speak of.
No, there was not. I got out a couple times, but mostly we had to go north a little bit. But, Well,
There'll be other years and there'll be more snow.
Could have gone to North Carolina. They had more snow than we did.
Did you get any chances to paddle this winter?
I did. I usually go out about once a month and try and find a place where I have open water. And I've got a daughter who teaches math in Brooklyn, New York, and comes home for the holidays. So every year between Christmas and New Year's, we go for a paddle. This year, as you know, was the coldest week between Christmas and New Year's on record since 1886. But we found a window. We went out. It was about 15 degrees, and we paddled the Lower Sugar River. And it was a couple places we had to pull over the ice. But we were dressed for it, and we had a great time.
And especially when you're with your daughter. What could be better?
Well, you know that.
Yeah, what's going to be better than that?
The daddy-daughter paddle is a special thing.
Indeed it is. Already Jesse has a question that relates a lot to what we're talking about here. So, Jesse, thank you for calling from Trempealeau.
Thank you. I just have a question for you. I'm looking at possibly getting a kayak or a one-man canoe. The reason is I like to fish, and I want to be able to go out on my own in the backwaters. So I kind of wanted to know what you recommend.
That's a really good question. So a lot of people automatically jump to kayak when there's one person involved. And I'm a big fan, if you look at my Facebook page, you will know this, of solo canoes. And the reason is a lot of times in southwestern Wisconsin especially, it's easier to get in and out of a canoe than it is a kayak, especially on those little creeks in the Driftless area like the Grant and the Kickapoo. When there's a 3-foot bank with some current, trying to get your feet under you and stand up is difficult. So that's the upside of a solo canoe. The downside, if you're in bigger water, if you flip, there's more, more work to do to get the water out and get back in. But if you're relatively close to shore most of the time, I really think that solo canoes are an option that I would look at.
Sounds great. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks so much for calling. You posted a photo of a canoe on, is it on the Ideas Network page?
No, it's on the Wisconsin Public Radio page.
Oh, it's on the Public Radio page. Okay. That looks like a solo. Is it a solo?
It is, yeah. It's a little 14-footer. Got some good volume to it, a lot of stability. It's a classic shape canoe, so it's really
beautiful.
Yeah. In general, if a canoe is pretty, it means it paddles well.
Oh, right. Is that right?
It's just how it works out. Yeah, there's some canoes out there that are aesthetically challenging, and they paddle like it. I've seen that over and over again in the past 30 years. So, yeah, it's a prototype, and I paddled it for about 15 minutes and said, okay, I want one. And my wife said, oh, wait, what about that?
What about the other 14?
13, yeah.
13.
But we used to call it the 1990 Marriage Preservation Boat Nonproliferation Act. And she just said, forget it, we're done. I give up.
Well, just thinking about Jesse of Trempealeau for a minute, one of the probably the great places to go would be to Canoe Copia if she's interested in looking at canoes or kayaks or just getting the lowdown.
Yeah, it's 250,000 square feet of stuff and gear and boats and kayaks and canoes and just everything you need to see what's going on. You know, it's all there.
Yeah, and it's starts on Friday.
Starts on Friday at 4.
Talk a little bit more about the event itself. It's located in Madison.
Yeah, it's at the Alliant Energy Center Exposition Hall. And we basically take over the whole thing. And it's got a bunch of different components. One is that we have a sale, which is great, you know, mm-hmm. so all that stuff. But the one that I think is more important personally for me is the speakers
yeah.
and the educational component. We have 150 presentations over 3 days. So if you want to learn how to do something, you're going to figure out a way to do it. There's paddling kayaks, canoes, stand-up paddle boards, and then there's tripping, how to go places, where to go, what to pack, how to pack, just a wealth of information. So you can go there and learn everything you need to learn to do it.
And I believe there will be several new boats revealed at the show this year.
Yeah, one of our manufacturers, Swift Canoe, out of Ontario, said, we've got a couple boats. We want to do the grand reveal at Canucopia. And I said, that would be fun. So they've got a couple boats. They're going to pull the cloth off, and people will see them for the first time.
Oh, man. Do you know anything about them? What do you?
I could tell you, but I'd have to kill you. it's a secret, Larry. That's why they're revealing it then.
Oh, man. So something to look forward to. You've put together a list of cool new products for us.
Yeah. One of the fun things about our industry is it's mostly people who didn't plan on getting into this industry. I'm a perfect example of that. You know, I have a liberal arts education from across the street here. But I never thought I'd grow up and own a business and, you know, sell canoes and kayaks to people. And so there's a lot of creative people who come from different areas of industry and of education. So we've got people who were, you know, product engineers for a company that made products that they weren't really passionate about it.
Mm-hmm.
And they decided, well, let's find something we're passionate about. And they were paddlers already. And so some of the best stuff comes from those people who were just their users.
And what have we got for new equipment? Give us some examples. PFDs are personal flotation devices, something kind of near and dear to my heart.
Yeah, so PFDs, life jackets, whatever you want to call them, have evolved significantly since, you know, 20 years ago when it was basically pieces of foam, you know, put in a cloth and strapped around your body, and comfort was considered secondary. And I'll give props to Philip. Philip Curry was one of these guys I talked about who was an entrepreneur who was a paddler and said, I can make stuff better than this. And started from the idea of instead of making flotation and making it fit your body, make clothing that floats. So he actually took his wife's sports bra apart and used that as a pattern for the first vest that they made. And said, this is how a body is cut. Let's try and mimic this. And that's when comfortable PFDs came along. So since then, they've added materials and fabric and different foams and different fastening mechanisms. So now, I'll tell you an embarrassing story. I was going home from a paddle, and I had on a life jacket. And I went and stopped at the grocery store, and I walked into to Metcalf's, and I'm standing in the checkout line, and these people are looking at me like I've got a third eye. I didn't. I was wearing my life jacket. It was so comfortable, I forgot I had it on. I'm like, oh, well. She's like, you're ready for the flood? I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. And she says, you're wearing a life jacket. I said, oops, okay. So that's how comfortable they are now.
And they are made for men, and there are PFDs made for women.
Women-specific PFDs are huge. Because men are fairly easy to fit. Mm-hmm. They have either a tube mm-hmm. or an inverted V or a V. Women have all these different degrees of freedom. And so fitting a woman is much harder. So a lot of these designers are smart. Some of the best ones, you know, either are women or they go to their spouses or wives or other significant others and say, try this on, see if it works. So they've actually asked women what they want, and then they made it, which is just a weird concept, right? I mean, ask people what they want, right?
Oh, man. And so we've got some wonderful PFDs, and you're going to be showing a lot of them at Canucopia. Our guest today, Darren Bush, Chief Paddling Evangelist, owner of Rutabaga Paddle Sports. Questions about Canucopia or maybe about canoes or kayaks, an experience to share, I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@WPR.org. We always look forward to hearing from you. I want to go back to the speakers a little bit. First, at there's an Arctic explorer, Will Steger.
Will Steger, yeah.
Yeah, Will Steger. What will he be talking about?
Exploring the Arctic. yeah, I know, dog sledding. But there's a lot of crossover between paddlers and winter people like me. I'm a great example of that. Mm-hmm. So people go to the Boundary Waters in the summer and paddle it, and then they'll go in the winter and snowshoe it and, you know, pull a toboggan with the gear on it and have a heated tent, which is, heated tents are like the best in the world because the idea is you can burn a calorie in your body, you can burn a calorie in with wood in a tent. And you're going to have much more efficiency keeping your body warm from outside sources than, you know, burning more calories. So you can carry less food and just be more comfortable. So hot tents are cool. We've got a couple of people speaking on winter camping. Kevin Kellen's giving a seminar on what's it like to camp in the winter.
Now, when you talk about, I can remember some winter camping. I once had a winter camping experience. When I was a graduate student, I invited, I think there were 10 of us on a winter camping.
Sounds epic.
camping experience. And I had a 9x18 tent. One of the tents I had was 9x18. So it could almost all of us could get in one tent for the evening and packed in kind of like sardines, with our sleeping bags, but it turned out to be a lot of fun.
Oh, it's a lot of fun, yeah. No bugs. Right.
We had skis, and we had some. We had a toboggan, and we just had a good time on a friend's farm.
Yeah, there's some people that are speaking. Dave and Amy Freeman, who spent a year in the Boundary Waters, one contiguous year, to raise awareness of the sulfide minings that mm-hmm. they're trying to do outside the Boundary Waters, and help people understand how that's a really bad idea. But they spent a winter. So they had it's a canvas tent with a little compact wood stove. So you can get your tent up to 80 degrees and dry your clothes and take your shoes off and warm your feet. It's decadent. It's really cool.
And it's obviously it's got a flue and,
yeah, it's got a little stove. It's about 18 by 12 by 10. And it's got a stove pipe in the back. It's about 3 or 4 inches in diameter. Goes out the side of the tent, and it's just like having a little den, except it's canvas.
That's wonderful. Anna in Milwaukee, we'll go to you next. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, good morning. Been listening to the show this morning, and a previous caller calling about a kayak or a canoe, and I'm looking for a kayak, but I've kind of been looking at some of the brands that are brand new. Instead of a compartment behind the seat, you kind of got an open area to place things. And I was kind of concerned, would that allow water in to drain into where you sit and where your feet are? And I thought, you know, I can't go to Madison to the paddle show. I had the perfect opportunity to go. But I'm just wondering if you've had that experience.
Right. So there's two basic kinds of kayaks. There's the sit-inside kayak, and there's the sit-on-top kayak. And I think you're talking about sit-on-top kayaks. Where there's...
No, this is a brand new one. Just come out, and Pelican is one of the brand names.
Okay.
I just saw it, and it's not really sit on top because you can sit in, but behind the seat, kind of a raised area where usually there's an apartment. This one is kind of an open area.
Right. Yeah. In general, it's kind of a tough question. I sit inside kayaks in my opinion, should have bulkheads and hatches. That's for safety as much as anything, and that's a compartment you open from the outside. Obviously, it's got like a trap door or a seal, and then you pull the seal off and load your stuff inside it, and you close it. It's absolutely waterproof. When I say absolutely waterproof, I mean it's a few tablespoons of water might get in there sometimes,
yeah.
But for the most part, they're dry. And more importantly, if you flip the boat over, it floats higher. If you've got no hatches and bulkheads, the boat sinks. And quick safety thing, most of the time when there's a problem, you know, we do have some unfortunate drownings every year.
Yep.
They're usually in April. And they're usually people that don't exactly know what they're doing, and they're using a boat that doesn't have hatches or bulkheads or has open areas that aren't really drainable, and the air is 80 degrees and the water is 40 degrees, and they go out for a paddle and the wind kicks up and they tip over. And so that's really where the problems are, is lack of flotation.
So you're not a big fan.
I'm a fan of safety.
Yeah.
And there are boats that we sell that don't have front and rear bulkheads, but there's flotation bags you can get and insert into that area that takes up the space that a hatch and bulkhead normally would, and make that boat safer.
Okay. So. Makes sense. Anna, thank you.
All right.
Appreciate it.
Another question, just quick question about the weight of kayaks. You know, as a female here, and I quite often go out by myself, and safety is a huge concern, or meet somebody else there, and, you know, getting the boat on top of the car, the SUV, any recommendations?
Yeah, there's a couple. Number one is a lighter boat. Okay, no one ever said, I wish my boat weighed more. Right?
Yeah.
That just hasn't happened. So lighter is better. The other thing is the different rack companies, car rack companies, make devices to assist you in loading the boat. Thule makes one called the Holovator that you actually load the boat at waist height, strap it in, and then pick it up, and it's got a little piston assist that helps you lift the weight, and then it goes up and clips on top of the car. Yakima also makes one that you lower down and put the boat on, you lift it up and slide it on. So those have been very popular, especially with people that are smaller with taller cars.
Yeah, for sure.
Yep.
And you'll probably have copies of those or examples of those at Canucopia, I would guess.
They'll all be there, yeah.
All right, good. Thanks a lot, Anna, for calling. Darren Bush, our guest, as we talk with him about canoeing and kayaking and Canucopia. I'm Larry Mueller, Jill Nadeau, our producer, here on the Ideas Network. Questions for our guest today, Darren Bush. I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. We'll go back to the phones and to Todd in Montello. Hi, Todd. Thank you for calling.
Hey, Larry. Great show. Always great information on your shows.
Thank you.
I'd ask your guest there if there's some kind of product that you can put on your kayaks to protect them from UV rays. I just recently found out that can be a very bad thing, and I don't really have a shed to put my kayak in.
Absolutely, sure. So there's a couple different ways. One's a physical barrier where you have like a bag that you can put your boat in. And those are fairly inexpensive and will save your boat. There's also sunscreen for your boat. It's called 303 or UV Tech. It's the same stuff. It's kind of like Armorall, except it isn't oil-based. It's a water-based, so you don't get an oil slick when you put your boat in the water.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that you can put that on any outdoor gear, and it'll make a huge difference in how long it lasts. You wipe it on a couple times a year, and that's all you need to do.
Great. Hey, do you have those bags at Canucopia?
We should have some, yes. It depends on the size of your boat. But yeah. we can, if you know what your boat is, we can order one that'll fit it.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling, Todd. Appreciate it. Let's take another call. Jen in Stevens Point, your turn now. Hi, Jen. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Darren. And thanks for the great show. And we love Canucopia. We've been down many times and we'll hope to go again this year. So thanks for offering all the great information there. We have a question about, we're looking at purchasing either a 15-foot or a 16-foot canoe just because we want one a little lighter weight. We're not getting any younger, and that canoe is getting harder to put on top of the car.
Sure.
So I have, so if you could talk about what you have in for suggestions for either a 15-foot or 16-foot, this would be for flat water usage, and then especially dealing with the stability, if there's a difference in the stability of a 15-foot versus a 16.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good questions. Generally, the stability of a 15 or a 16 is pretty similar. What they'll do is they'll just make the 15 slightly wider to make up for the lack of a boat in the water, right? Yeah, I mean, everybody should have a 15-foot canoe. They live in Wisconsin. We always think of canoes as 17-foot, and that's because Grumman's were the canoe forever, right?
Yeah.
And they're 17 feet. So but a little 15 footer is just, it's just great for around here, all those little twisty turny rivers. And so there's a couple that I really like. One is called the Bob Special, and that's made by a company called Novacraft, and you can get that in different layups, we call them, different compositions, and you can get them down pretty light in the mid to high mid 40s, early low 40s. Swift makes a boat called the Prospector 15 that I really like. Actually, the one I'm buying is a 14 foot version of that, and they're quite stable, quite comfortable, and you can get those down in the low 30s for a tandem, which is really, really light. Winona makes one. They make a 16 footer called the Adirondack, which is one of our better selling boats, and that's 36 pounds and stupid light, and stable. So pretty much every canoe company makes a boat that is that profile, you know, small whatever, you know, twisty turny streams. The nice thing about the 15 footers is you can often flip them around and paddle them backwards as a solo, which is makes it a really versatile boat. Or you can turn around and paddle it solo with a kid in the back seat facing backward, right? Because they're closer to the end, so the boat trims a little bit better. So the first open canoe I bought, because I started in whitewater, was a 15-foot canoe. And it took me through all of my kids until I still have it. I'm never going to get rid of it.
So
wonderful. That's great information. Thank you.
Jen, how do you get your canoe up on the boat, on the car now?
Brute force.
Well, is there any way to help Jen get that canoe up on?
Yeah, there's a couple things. It depends on the kind of rack you have and the kind of boat you have. Yakima makes a thing called the Showboat, and it's a roller that extends back behind your car, so you can pick the boat up and sit the gunnels on the roller and then push it forward rather than going from the side. And so those work great.
That sounds like a good solution for you, Jen.
Yeah, or your 23-year-old son works really great too.
Sure.
Yeah, I got a 25-year-old, and that's you're true. You load the boats, but I'm tying them down.
Right. There you go.
All right. Well, thanks so much for the information.
Yeah. Thanks, Jen.
Hopefully, we'll see you down at Canoocopia.
Yeah. Yeah. If you go to the customer service and page me, I'll come over and say hey.
All right. Awesome. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Jen. And let's go to Dan in Franksville next. Dan, hi. Thank you for calling.
Sure. Yeah. Just wondering, what's a good canoe to get for a really rough service? Like if you hit a lot of rocks and you're going down a river and you stop dead, smack into a rock with a lot of weight. I don't know. Is there anything that's good? I used to have an old plastic. I don't care about weight. We used to have a old Coleman. I think it was plastic, and this thing took unbelievable abuse.
The Coleman Ramex. Oh, yep, with the aluminum pipe down the middle. Yep.
Yep. That's it.
So there's a new material, well, actually a family of new materials that has come out in the past couple of years, and every manufacturer has one. So for Novacraft, it's called Tough Stuff. For North Star Canoe, it's called IXP. And basically what they've done is, you know, fiberglass is basically sand, right? They melt it down like cotton. They spin it like cotton candy, and they make those fibers, and then they weave them. And that's what fiberglass is. So they did the same thing with basalt, you know, the igneous rock basalt. Mm-hmm. And they weave that with a material called Anegra, which is an aramid kind of like Kevlar. And those two things together, for some reason, are just really, really beefy. And one of my staff, Ethan, just got back from a trip on the Rio Grande for a week paddling an IXP material canoe. And he said, I just kept on expecting to flip it over and seeing a giant hole. And it's like there's nothing there. They beat the snot out of it. So those materials are available now, and they are lighter than plastic, which is really nice, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're There are YouTube videos of companies throwing them off a five-story factory and having them bounce and then paddling them home. Yeah, seriously, it's pretty cool.
So there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Jim in Alabama called to ask if you could talk about blow-up kayaks. She has one, but she hasn't used it yet.
Yeah, so inflatable kayaks are kind of like... They run the gamut from what I think is a beach toy, you know, which I would never use other than paddling around at the beach, to a pr- pretty nice boat that's got some durability to it. The inexpensive ones you see for, you know, $199, I don't trust them. They're gonna go bad. But there's a company like called Innova that makes a really nice inflatable that you can just beat the snot out of, and they actually use them in the Pacific Northwest for rescue boats. That's how tough they are. So not all inflatables are created equally, and generally the more you pay, the better you get.
What are you gonna for one like that? What are you gonna pay?
$800 to $1,000.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's not out of the realm of possibility for many people. Shelley emailed to say she has two kids, 7 and 9, and she and her husband would love to do a Boundary Waters trip with them. Any tips for a paddling adventure with kids?
Yes. So, first of all, congratulations for making it past the point where they're just baggage, right?
Mm-hmm.
They can actually contribute now. It's really cool. There are several speakers at Cornucopia this weekend who are talking about tripping with kids. And Kevin Callen is one of our longstanding attendees. He has a 9-year-old daughter, and they've paddled all over together. The trick is to pick smaller routes, go slower, don't try and put in a lot of miles, get off the water quick, and, you know, pick lakes that are a little bit more protected. And you probably could paddle in two small canoes with a 7-year-old and a 9-year-old. I think you're probably about there. And there's a lot of places in the southern part of the Boundary Waters. Yeah, like the Sawbill area that has, you know, the Frost River. All those places have smaller lakes.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're carrying their own gear, right? They're going to carry a little portage pack so they can carry their stuff. But, you know, let them bring a coloring book and, you know, things like that the kids like, so when they get to camp, they're not just sitting there watching, especially if it rains. So keep them dry, keep them fed, keep them happy.
And maybe come and listen to some of those speakers, I would think, huh?
Yep. If you go online to Cornucopia.com, there's a list of speakers and topics, so you can go in and see who's speaking on kids' topics, and there's quite a few of them.
Yeah. And just to go along with that, Gloria and West Alice emailed to ask if there are activities for kids at Cornucopia.
We have a lot of kids that come to Cornucopia, and it's like a giant bouncy castle, right? Kids are crawling in inside of boats, and the manufacturers don't care. We don't care. We think it's great. And the talks are really good, and even younger kids can like them. I would mention, I forget to say this, but 17 and under is free. We like kids to get exposed to boats. And it's easy for a parent to bring a big family and not break the bank. So.
Oh, that's great. A listener emailed to ask for a recommendation for a kayak that would be good for 10 to 12-year-olds.
There's a couple different choices. One is the Perception Prodigy XS. There's a Prodigy family that goes from kid size up to adult size, and they're really simple. They're not very expensive, and the nice thing about them is kids don't wear out kayaks, right? They don't have enough time to. So you can sell it for $50 less than you paid for it to the next guy. And my daughter's first kayak she got when she was 6, and I think I know that it went through at least 3 families that I know, and then then it disappeared. And
it may still be out there, though.
Oh, it's definitely still out there. And what I tell people is, you know, don't get a small adult kayak and expect the kid to have a good time paddling it. And the analogy I use, if you go get a small mountain bike and then tape 2x4 blocks with duct tape to the pedals and just say, you know, get used to it. We would never put kids in hiking boots that are 3 sizes too big so they'll grow into it, right? So because they're not very expensive and they hold their value, it's actually a good investment.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Well, tell us about the Aluminum Chef competition that you've got. How'd that get started?
Oh, we had that idea years ago from Iron Chef, where you have these people competing. Camp cooking isn't really that different than cooking at home if you think about it. You know, you have some material constraints if you're packing it in. But you can do a lot with camp cooking. And what we do is we take camp stoves and camp cooking gear instead of, you know, the 6-burner, you know, Sub-Zero, right? And we force people who normally don't do that to do that. So there's 2 people that cook who are experienced camp chefs but not trained as cooks, and then Luke Zahm from the Driftless Cafe who is a James Beard Award-winning chef, comes and cooks in something that would not be his normal milieu, right? And it's a riot. It's really fun. So, yeah.
Do people get to eat what they...
Yes, they do. We have judges. And then we have an appetizer, we have a main course, we have a dessert. And they all fight, and it's a riot, and it's really fun. And you know, Luke's a great sport for coming and doing that. And we have and then Marty is a retired ranger from the Ozarks, who is as he says, never trust a skinny cook. He's a big dude. And then Mona Tippetts, who's a food dehydrator and kind of a techie person that way. She does really cool stuff. So she has a couple different seminars on how to dehydrate your own food, which is a really great way to save money when you're going out in the bush.
And so do they bring their own ingredients and so forth? Or was there some surprise ingredient?
There's always a surprise ingredient. A couple years ago, it was walleye. And that was kind of
fun. Well, that's a good surprise.
Well, luckily, it's not a surprise if you're out canoeing and you can catch one. But we have surprise ingredients, and we get some help from Whole Foods. They usually give us some food. And Luke graciously donates as well. So they have a pantry. To choose from. We just say, okay, you're making an appetizer, go. And there's dried fruit, and there's things you would normally use on a camping trip, tortillas and stuff like that. And then they just have to get busy with it.
Oh, man.
It's so fun.
Gary in Boscobel, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Gary. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, thank you, Larry. I have an old Peshtigol cedar canoe that's I restored and is covered with canvas. And then once you put the canvas on, you have to slop on a bunch of paste-like sealer to seal that canvas. And over the years, some of that paint is starting to let loose from that canvas. Can I just repaint that, or do I have to sand those bare spots down, and then do I have to reapply that sealer before I can repaint it?
Yeah, that's a question that's hard to answer without seeing the boat. So I've had a couple boats re-canvassed just because the paint and the it's called dope filler. It's so flaky that it's probably not worth doing. So if you can get the big stuff off, just scrape it off and get the big chunks and then lightly sand it and then re-dope it, you can do that. It's a tough one. It depends how long you want to keep the boat. And if this is a long-term investment, I would re-canvas it.
Can you do it yourself, re-canvas it?
You can. There's YouTube videos, and if you're handy at all, and you know, you need a few different tools that you don't normally have in the laying around the shop, you know, some different kinds of clinchers and stretchers and things like that. But anybody can do it if they're relatively handy. There's also people that do this. And they can do as much or as little as you want. And if you go to, there's a booth there from the Wooden Canoe Heritage Association, the WCHA, the different WCHA. It's not the hockey one. So they're all wooden canoe enthusiasts, and there's people there that do this on a regular basis, and they can either give you advice or they can steer you to someone that would do it for you.
Oh, makes sense. Gary, I hope that helps. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And you can join in, too. Quick question at 800-642-1234. Let's go back through the specifics on Canoecopia, though. It starts Friday at what time?
Yep, it's 4 to 9 Friday, and then 9 to 6 Saturday, and 10 to 5 Sunday.
Okay, and cost of that?
It's $15 for a day pass for adults, or $25 for the weekend. We're selling mostly weekend passes now. With the number of speakers there are to see, you really can't see everything in a day. But you're welcome to come for just a day.
Yeah, and kids are 17 and under are for...
17 and under are free, yeah. We want to encourage people, especially families, to get into paddling.
And the... speakers, are there speakers all 3 days?
And yes, we start speakers at 4:30, and we run them till 4:30 on Sunday.
And how many, do you even know how many? how many exhibitors you have at the...
200 and something right now. I can't remember exactly. It changed. We had a person call yesterday and said, please find me a spot. And so I'm trying to... I'm working in, you know, non-Euclidean space, trying to create something for somebody who had nothing. We might be able to find a spot for them, but we'll do our best.
Oh, my goodness me. And we have so many more. Let's see if we can get another person on here before we're done. Let's go to Marcia in Superior. Marcia, hi.
Hi, Larry.
Thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Well, I'm wondering, I'm an older adult, and I'm wondering if there's a kayak for, like, me. I'm in my 70s, and I have a dog. It's a Weimaraner. So I'm wondering whether or not there's a kayak that would be suitable for me and for my dog.
Yes, that's the short answer. the long answer is there's different ways to do it. There's also something called a pack canoe, which is a canoe you sit on the bottom of. It's kind of like a kayak without a deck on it. Those tend to work really well with dogs because they can move around a little bit more and not be trapped up against you, because you need a pretty big cockpit if you're going to, you know, have a dog in there with you,
right.
and it's going to be right where your paddle's going to be. So, but there's some sit-on-tops that work pretty well. Some of the fishing kayaks have a big flat deck, which tends to work well with the dog.
Okay.
So give that, give those, and maybe stop, and you, all those are going to be on exhibit.
Oh, sure. Yeah, and I will tell you, if you've got a call and you can't get to it, they can email me at darrenb@rutabaga.com, and I'll answer their questions.
All right.
Excellent.
Sure.
All right.
Thanks very much for calling. And by the way, on the fishing, just to... to close it out, the kayak fishing boats, I saw some in your catalog there of Canucopia. They look really, there's some really cool ones now.
Yeah, they're blown up. They're set up for just fishing, but people use them for bird watching. Anytime you need a stable platform, there's powered pedal drives now. You can get a pedal that drops down, and you can pedal like a bicycle, and it'll move the boat without using your hands, which leaves your hands free for casting or binoculars or photographing or whatever.
And what I noticed with great interest was the prop, at least on one of them, is pretty much can stay weed free.
Yeah, that's the Kusa FD, FD from Jackson Kayak, and it has a really cool prop where you can actually pull it up while you're in it and clear any weeds if there are any weeds on it, and then drop it down again.
Yeah,
that's cool stuff.
That would be a real advantage for sure. Well, Darren, I know you're going to have a great time at Canucopia, and it's a kind of a year-round thing for you now anymore, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I have the best staff in the world. They're so good, and they know their jobs, and they're just doing them. So at this point, my job is to talk to people.
You know. Well, you're going to have plenty of people to talk with. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Larry.
Darren Bush, Chief Paddling Evangelist and owner of Rutabaga Paddle Sports Canucopia, March 9th through the 11th. And if you're interested in kayaks and canoes, boy, what a place to visit. If you're interested in woods and trees and maybe even urban woods, I hope you'll stay with us, because we're going to be talking about the Wisconsin Urban Wood Program. That next here on the Ideas Network.